Hey everybody, my name is John Steyer, and it is another episode of Social Echoes from True Voice Media. This is episode 20 of the Social Echoes podcast. Joining me today is a good friend of mine up in New York, and anybody watching the video can see he's hanging out outside on Chelsea Piers, kind of flaunting it for the rest of the world. That's a nice view you have behind you, dude.
It is. It's not a bad view at all.
So how are you doing today, Harrison?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, John. It's really happy to be on here, and I feel like that you've wedged me in between some like superstar guests. So hopefully, I can hold my own in your lineup.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you certainly deserve to be there, and I'm glad that you accepted my invitation to come on.
Do you want to tell them how I accepted your invitation?
Oh man, I'm trying to remember now. You sent me some kind of video, didn't you?
It was I was so honored that I sent you I think it was the GIF of Jennifer Lawrence falling down the stairs
yes.
while accepting the Oscar.
That was fantastic. That was. I don't think anybody else can trump that. That's pretty good. That's really, really good. And it's so funny too because Jennifer Lawrence is in the news today. We're recording this on what's today, May 8th, 2013. Jennifer Lawrence has been in the news the last couple of days because she photobombed Jessica.
Sarah
Jessica Parker.
Yeah, I saw that, and I think while we're talking social and all things in between, I think that that's just such a it's like somebody being themselves, but I think she also understands what she's doing along the way, where she's where she just gets that everything that she does is magnified, and so the more personable that she is, like, the better that she's going to do, and so far it's worked out great for her.
Yeah, like you said, I think she's just being herself, which is probably the most rewarding thing. I didn't really know who she was when my girlfriend Kylie, who you obviously have met a couple of times,
yep.
When she dragged me to go see The Hunger Games, I didn't know who Jennifer Lawrence was, and then I mm-hmm. thought, oh, right, she was in X-Men, and now she's blown up ever since.
Yep.
But that's she's living a social life. Quite honestly, she's being
yeah.
herself.
Yeah, and it's I just watched Silver Linings Playbook too, and obviously you gotta love that as a Philly fan. But yeah, it's nice to see her kind of like her meteoric rise over the last couple of years.
Yeah. So speaking of being Philly fans, as I said, it's May 8th, which means that we just got the news about our boy. As I'm wearing my Phillies hat, we just got news from our boy Roy Halladay. He's got
yep.
the all sorts of different troubles in his arm and his shoulder. He's got a frayed labrum. He's got a partially torn rotator cuff, and he's got bone spurs. And I think the interesting thing about that is I was listening to the radio announcement of that because I'm in Philadelphia and Harrison's in New York City. But I also was interacting with everybody else on Twitter and Facebook and everybody kind of different reactions, certain people saying,
I went into a hole. Yeah, I've gone into a cave. I just came out for this.
I know, man. It's so upsetting because I was 21 when – actually, I was 20 when the Phillies won the World Series. And ever since then, it's been like, this magic garden of Philly success. And we've been able to record it in this really interesting fashion. Now it seems like everybody's just, as time goes on, they're just totally dying off.
I think that, they definitely are, they're definitely struggling. I think people forget just how bad the 90s and the early 2000s were, like where we would get extremely excited over an 81 season. So it's still better than it ever was. And frankly, I still don't think that. I think the team's much better than their record says, because it's nice to see a lot of the older guys starting to play well again. It's tough, and I think Philly fans, I never thought that I would say that we got spoiled, but we were spoiled for like 4 or 5 years, and when you come off that high, it's tough to keep the magic going.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, obviously, we both are rooting for the good doctor to come back
yes.
and be all hunky-dory and a-okay.
Yep.
But anyway, speaking of living a social life, you certainly do that quite well. I was wondering if you'd be good enough to share your social story with everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we say that I live a social life, it's almost like I feel like a phony right now because I've since accepting or since taking on a new role at 2U, I've been very sparse on Twitter lately, and kind of more keeping it to my internal community on Facebook and some of the groups that I'm in there. But so still social, but not really as public lately. That said, though, my social story. Let's see, back when I was 19, so when social actually really 18. Yeah, 18 was when I really started to kind of get into PR, started doing some internships in Philadelphia while still at Drexel University. Had one that went really well, was at a boutique agency. Worked on a really cool campaign over the summer. Took that straight into my co-op, a 6-month internship that I had that really did not like, love the people, but really just the internship wasn't right for me. But during it, I actually was able to kind of catch on with what was going on in Twitter and really, starting to see just at first just how fun it was. Like, I think one of the first cool interactions I had on Twitter was that Larry Fitzgerald, the Arizona Cardinals wide receiver, who's one of my favorite NFL players of all time, really, he tweeted me, and I just thought that was like a really cool thing that you could have a one-on-one interaction. So I kind of just started, getting more into it through then. Got more involved with the Drexel chapter of PRSSA. Was an account exec for our student-run PR firm. So really just jumped right in. And then just started kind of getting involved with the national community of PRSSA. All the while, in the meantime, I started up Kratz PR, which was like my first like real initiative that I took on my own. I actually started doing PR and social media for like local artists, local businesses, of all different kinds of nonprofits, and some companies like in Miami and even one in Israel as well. Just doing like a lot of pro bono work for a lot of smaller companies, and learned a lot through just doing it, and learned a lot through failure. But that really got me my start. Really had a brand behind me, and I kind of took that through. Through my sophomore year at Drexel, transferred to Temple, stayed in Philly. Then my big thing, as you and I have actually really the reason why we know each other was Tweet Drive. So I started that as probably many of my followers know. We started a toy drive for social media professionals around the country. That started in 2010. So since then, we've been doing it the last 3 years, and now it's evolved into Operation Social Santa. We've been able to partner with some incredible startups and brands such as Hootsuite and Airbnb and Clout, Eventbrite, PopChips. I mean, just amazing partners that have all kind of gone all in on this collaborative effort to raise toys for kids during the holidays. And so far, we've collected well over 10,000 toys. We've hosted over, I think, over 75 events now. In over 60 different cities, so yeah, it's been a great experience. And from there, I've leveraged that into a job in New York. I started as a social media, or actually community manager at Tutor at the time. We're now 2U, and we're one of the largest education tech startups in the world, if not the largest. And through that, I've been able to work with some amazing universities, ironically, and most notably University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And now I'm the business development manager at 2U, where I work with all of our different university partners. So it's been a fun ride, been fast and furious, but it's been just about 3 years kind of since I really got everything started. So it's been fun, and through that, I've also been able to speak at different schools. I've hosted my own podcast, and yeah, so I'm gonna stop rambling for a second.
I should also say that you've done this all by the ripe age of 22,
Yeah,
which
we're
is
gonna
just
we'll leave that out. I'll let you bring that up.
But yeah, it's interesting. I was hoping that you would bring up social Santa simply because that's the way that we know each other. as you said, started off as Tweet Drive and then evolved into Operation Social Santa. And I was with you in New York City when you were trying to figure out the name and the branding and the different angles of it, roughly before Thanksgiving of last year. And going back even further, the way that I kind of got my start in social and different communities that I'm involved in now, Richie DiMatteo of Bad Rhino kind of invited me to this one event, which ended up being the Tweet Drive Tsunami, Tweet Up for Japan,
yep.
Event that you, Kyle Hardy, and I guess
Melissa Jones.
And Lauren hosted.
Yep.
Melissa Jones as well, right?
Yep.
And that's how I got my start, and I got to meet everybody else down there and really see what the power of the online world can bring to the offline world. And that really kind of got me tweeting more, being more heavily involved in Twitter, and you know, that's how my story starts.
Well, yeah. And that's what it's all about. You know, it's all about, I mean, whether it's just for you as an individual or whether it's a larger cause, you know, could be nonprofit, could be work. I mean, seeing really any social success has to leverage into some real world action. So the fact that, you know, that you and I were able to kind of see that power so young, I think that it's definitely been an asset to us, you know, as we kind of start and navigate our careers.
So you mentioned that you've since moved on from the UNC role and to a much larger basis in the business development side of 2U. So what does that look like? What does a normal day look like for you, and what are some of your responsibilities?
First, there is no normal day, but honestly, you know, my responsibilities mainly are to drive students into this program through strategic partnerships. And so basically, I'm not in charge of getting new schools that we partner with or anything like that, but basically I take, you know, the schools that we're already working with, like UNC. We also work with Georgetown and USC and WashU of St. Louis. I work with these, you know, with our partner programs, we bring their schools online, or we bring their grad programs online. And so what I do is, you know, as we build these programs, we have to reach new markets. We have to bring in new students. So through partnerships like, you know, with like maybe public health organizations for our Master's in Public Health program at GW, I'll partner with them to offer, you know, to offer some sort of benefit to, you know, to their members or something like that. Or maybe we'll provide content from our faculty and school leadership. There's so many different things. But basically my day is, you know, filled up with managing those relationships, figuring out what works best on both sides of the table, reaching out to new potential partners. So really it all revolves around the same mission, but just every day looks pretty different from each other, right? You know, sometimes it's short-term goals, sometimes it's long-term goals. But ultimately, you know, my background in social media is the reason why I think I've been able to succeed so far in it. It's because it's all relationship managing, right? Knowing how to take cues from people, how to communicate with them, how to reach out to them successfully, how to pitch them sometimes. So really, you know, all my skills in that have actually all rooted from PR and through social media. So it's nice to be able to tie that back, you know, to kind of tie this new position back to my roots and not stray too far from like what got me here.
So obviously when you started out at Drexel, you weren't going into Drexel saying, I'm going to be the next great big superstar on social media. What did you want to be when you grew up, basically?
Originally, I wanted to be probably a SportsCenter anchor. You and I share that in common, is that, you know, we could stop talking about social media and talk about sports for the next 4 hours and not even, you know, take
right.
a breath. You know, while I was in school, I'd write for the school paper sometimes. I would, you know, write about, you know, my favorite athletes. I'd, you know, do all these kind of things just for practice, really. And then I kind of just got a little discouraged by, I saw the, you know, the job market and the, you know, potential for a journalism degree. It wasn't that appealing, and then I kind of realized that I was really good at talking to people. I'd already actually done some public speaking while I was in high school. So I really just understood, I think I just understood people, and some of my family members were in PR. So I figured, maybe I should give this a shot. So really, when I went to Drexel, I just went to go major in that and see what would happen. I didn't really have any lofty goals. That kind of came later on.
Yeah, the other thing too, I mean, I remember asking you once before, if not more than once, I asked you if you had really ever dreamed of being an entrepreneur, and you kind of like leaned back in the chair and you said no, and that you told me the story that you just laid out. And it's interesting that that kind of seems to be the case right now. I mean, like right now, the word entrepreneur it's very hot. Like, it's so in vogue, and there are many different definitions for it. But I think people at the same time are using it in incorrect ways. For example, I wouldn't describe myself personally as an entrepreneur. I'm not heading up my own company. I'm not.
But you're entrepreneurial.
Right. But I think that's different than being an entrepreneur.
Yes. Yeah, and you know, I would definitely say I was entrepreneurial as a kid without even realizing it. I ran like eBay shops for baseball cards with my friends, you know, and I sold a lot of cards, like buying and selling, collecting. But yeah, I did a lot of different things that I would, you know, I would always do the magazine drives, and actually like finished first in my school, in the school when I was like in eighth grade, you know, sold them as magazines. But I never really thought of myself as like an entrepreneur. I just liked doing things, you know, and it was never, I think the cool thing for me was that it was never about money. I mean, maybe it was a little bit of, I don't know, that was fun. Maybe it was a little bit of ego fulfillment, but you know, ultimately it was never because of money. And I think that that's why I kind of just stumbled into being an entrepreneur. I think that's what you see from a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs, is that, you know, they're not really in it for the money. It's more of an entrepreneurial mindset. And when you have that mindset, eventually you're going to stumble upon either a problem that you see or a solution that you have. And you're going to figure out how you can take advantage of it, because you actually want to make a change rather than just make money off of it. You know what I mean? So I think that that's where you and I fall into the same boat, is, you know, we're entrepreneurial, you know, you wanted to kind of share your voice and talk to some of the most brilliant minds in social media. So you start this podcast, you know, you work with me on the toy drive, right? Like, so those are all entrepreneurial endeavors. And I think that, you know, because we're thinking in the entrepreneurial mindset, just with the end goal of accomplishing something that's more than just being an entrepreneur, I think that goes a long way.
I think your private jet's flying away behind you.
Yeah, it is. I missed it, but we can stay on.
So, staying on top of it not being the money, obviously, TweetDrive is not about the money. It's about giving back to something that's along the same lines of being entrepreneurial. It's about doing something that you can actually affect change. I want you to share your story about how you got kind of like, what was the, what's the real root of what started TweetDrive and then ended up leading into Operation Social Santa?
Yeah. When I was at Drexel that first year that I really started to get involved, one of the things that I did at PRSSA, and I guess I'll take a step back even before that, you know, that piece. I mean, when I grew up, I just, you know, my mom would have, you know, she would have us, you know, volunteer at soup kitchens and churches, you know, for like holiday dinners and stuff. So I was always, you know, always involved in some sort of way of giving back, right? Even if it wasn't like just, you know, my own money, it was, you know, some, maybe an effort that I could do to give back. I was always very, very conscious of that. So when I was a freshman at Drexel, I worked at Bounce U back in Langhorne, Pennsylvania, which is like a kid's party place, moon bounces, everything. We had, and the for Christmas that year, we had kids from the local homeless shelter come in to bounce with us, and they, you know, they had a great time. I had a blast. I think I had a better time than the kids did, to be honest. For those that know me, that's probably not a surprise whatsoever. So yeah, but we only had kind of books for them, and you know, and it was a great event, and I'm sure that, you know, there was nothing lost for them, but you know, I saw that as an opportunity of like, you know, this is Christmas, you know, I mean, every kid, whether they have the means or not, should deserve to have that feeling, and we were able to give that to them, you know, for that night, but I figured what could we do that would carry on. So when I was at Drexel, you know, for my sophomore year, getting involved with PRSSA, we were looking for a charity project, so I proposed that we start a toy drive. So I ran it, start to finish. And then we brought them to those kids that came into Bounce U, had a great time, collected about like 150 toys in just a couple weeks for the entire homeless shelter. And then, you know, that's when I really started getting involved in social media. So the next year I was, you know, sitting down with a friend in New York, and we were just kind of thinking about what's next, right? What more could we do? How could we get involved with things? And I kind of came up with this idea of like, wow, I did this toy drive. What if we tried using social media to get to spread this around the country and maybe even the world? So my first like mock-up of what we might be able to do was like literally the sky was the limit. Right. And we kind of dissected it down to just, you know, even if it was just 8, 10, 12 cities, if we could get people involved on social media donating toys, then we can, you know, we can replicate what I was able to do with 150 toys in cities all around the country. And, you know, whether that would result in just maybe 200 toys or 2000 toys, that's what the goal was to get people connected online, that were connected online, to give back to their own communities, and we were able to succeed in that, and we still have.
Yeah, and somebody might argue, well, why not just participate in a Toys for Tots drive, or you know, kind of do something smaller? Just, you know, why create something of your own? And to answer my own question, I would think that you don't get the same impact. So, for example, I did the Philadelphia Operation Social Sand the past 2 years, and I also had the opportunity to go and visit some of the families that were affected that we actually directly impacted. And if we had done, if Operation Social Santa didn't exist or anything like that, I may have gone and done something at a soup kitchen or just contributed toys to my church or something along those lines. But it wouldn't have actually been able to walk into a home and see the impact on the parents' faces that the family that I'm speaking about. They lost their home in a fire weeks before Christmas, and through the kindness of strangers and neighbors, they were given a place to live during the holidays, and a whole bunch of other toys that were contributed through our different sponsors, through the sponsorship dollars, the donations that other people in the area brought to it. It's a crazy thing when you think about what people think, oh, so you're donating toys through Facebook and Twitter. And you think, yes and no. You're using, what's that?
Oh, no, keep going. I'll jump in.
It's just that people, I think, forget sometimes that it's the people on the other end of the conversation. Like, you're not getting toys from Twitter. You just don't hit a button and toys drop out from the bird. It's you need to have that type of relationship that Ted Rubin talks about. You're getting that return on that relationship, return on relationships, and that ends up impacting people in different ways. And we get to directly see it through the work that we do through Operation Social Santa. And it's a really fantastic organization I'm proud to be a part of.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for, you know, kind of sharing your story of how you've been involved. I think, you know, definitely last year what we were able to do in Philly was one of the more gratifying experiences that I've had since starting, you know, Tweet Drive and Operation Social Santa. But really it's, you know, it's tough to really influence other people when you're doing things silently, right? And there's nothing wrong with that, right? We shouldn't be doing things to say, look at me, look what I'm doing. But you know, if you bring your toys directly to the Toys for Tots drop-off, or you drop them off in the box as you pass by in, you know, say, in a CVS or a Duane Reade or something, right? You're not really setting an example for other people to follow your lead, right? You're doing it for yourself, but I think that we should kind of look externally and say, like, I'm doing this because I want to help people, but maybe there's, you know, what more could I do? How could I make a positive impact without spending more money, right? Because everybody has their, you know, their means and whatnot. And that's what we've been able to do with Social Santa, though, is we've been able to inspire others to give back, right? For whatever their motivation is, you know, the bottom line is that we're giving toys, and, you know, people like you and I are able to deliver those and really see that bottom line, which is really important. But throughout the entire event, you know, somebody brings their friend, somebody, you know, tells their friend about it, and it's really, it's created this network of giving during the holidays, rather than just internal giving, it's external giving, and everybody's able to share in that. And I think that's the most powerful thing that we've been able to create at Operation Social Santa, that differs from other toy drives, because they are internal giving, where this is really something that, that rubs off on other people on a very large scale.
Yeah, and the social part of it becomes an amplifier for, you know, whatever the cause is. I mean, there's plenty, there's thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of nonprofits and charities in the world. And there's a lot of them that really do awesome things through social media. It just that this one has grassroots, and it's not part of, an organization that allows it to kind of be like, oh, look what this company's doing. Like, no, this is something that it just came from strictly wanting to make an impact on the world.
Yeah, so, and we've become, you know, kind of the, and when you talk about social, we've actually kind of become a holiday microphone for the organizations that we donate to. Because we donate all our toys to individual organizations and families. So, you know, we're helping other organizations with their missions, and other charities with their own missions, where maybe they don't have the, you know, the resources to really to have a social voice during the holidays. And we're really able to amplify that. And I think that that's another powerful thing. And hopefully we're able to kind of maybe impact, you know, them throughout the rest of the year, because we're bringing more people that are, you know, in that are now familiar with their cause and their mission. And I think that's, you know, that's something too, is that, you know, by working with all these organizations, we've created a social network of organizations, in a sense too, because everybody's, you know, kind of tied to this umbrella of giving, and I think social media has definitely played a big part of that in allowing us to be that voice for other causes and other missions.
So to switch gears a little bit, you're in New York City. There's plenty of different things happening in the social scene. What is there like a big thing that's being talked about right now? Like, is there like one thing or a couple different things that might be of real interest to people?
Oof.
It's a loaded question.
Yeah, I could make a plug for Community Managers Meetup, which I'm on the board for, and we
ahead.
Yeah, right. We have a great, you know, and our organizing board, a team of, you know, Megan Peters from Mashable and Dave Brown from MKG and Matt Nell from AOL and Natalie Rodica and, you know, Sheena Medina. I mean, just the whole team is awesome, you know, and we're really able to. We have, you know, 100 of the best social media minds in, you know, at our meetups every single month. So that's, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be involved with that. I actually got my job through that community when I was still going to school. So that's a great one. General Assembly has a lot of great classes and stuff. I mean, you know, if you want to learn social while meeting other people, General Assembly has a great, you know, great community and great thing going in New York. Skillshare classes are definitely a great way to meet other people. But really, you know, the scene is, I mean, there's Tech Drink Up. There's just so many different things going on. And, you know, now you see that just people are busy. That's the interesting thing about New York, you know, is people are just really busy. And I think that, you know, as I get more involved in the scene, you know, it's actually, or actually as I grow in the industry, I've actually seen that I'm kind of starting to separate myself a little bit from just the every night events and things like that, because, you know, you kind of realize that, you know, there's so many different ways to meet people, and I've been lucky to build some really close relationships with people in this community. So, you know, I rely on those more than just me, you know, going out to these events to meet new people. Where it's actually, I've been able to try to find like a work-life balance in New York, which I don't know if that's fully possible, but there's a lot of great things going on. It's just a matter of balancing it all, in all honesty.
Yeah, a lot of the different networking events that I've had the opportunity to go to with you, get to meet Laura Horak from Hootsuite, which I'm still aiming to get her on the program. I got to meet Doug, one of the founders of Meetup.
Yep.
And just some spectacular people, obviously. And the interesting thing about, you talk about the networking aspect of it too, your networks and how to leverage them. The interesting thing I tell people, like, this is like networking from a chair, you know. I get to go to California every couple weeks and talk to somebody out there, and I have never, furthest west I've ever been is Nashville. So for me, that's pretty incredible. So I have two more questions for you, and then I'll let you go. But what is your favorite type of content to create?
Oof. I would have to say that my. So I can't do this on my own, but I've had some great experiences with creating infographics, where I've created the concept for them. I can't design them, I'll say that right now, but I have created the, really designed the content and what we wanted to go in them. And I've really enjoyed, so I'll say that infographics I've had, because there's a mission behind the ones that I've produced, like we've made one, I created one for the MBA program at UNC that was focusing on women in the workplace. And that really was able to start a great conversation on so many different sites. I mean, we got placement on Forbes, Mashable, The Next Web, Women 2.0, all these amazing sites, and really started a great conversation. And I think the fact that we were able to do that across, across so many different sites, across so many different communities was really gratifying. So I have to say that, creating that type of mission-driven, cool content is really exciting. And then the other thing, I love leveraging my real-world experiences into blog posts. I absolutely love it. I haven't been doing it too much lately, but almost every post that I've written, whether it's been for like Jay Baer's blog, Convince and Convert, or Business to Community, or Social Media Today, or it's all rooted out of my personal experiences, whether it's through just everyday life or through the work that I do with 2U or Operation Social Santa. And the fact that I'm able to kind of tell my story and relay that into advice and maybe and words of wisdom for other people is a lot of fun. So when I can write a passionate blog post, that's it's pretty tough to beat.
Yeah, and I've seen obviously a lot of the different infographics that you've created, and they have gotten many multitudes of shares on different blogs, and I've seen them repurposed on different websites that you look at and you say, well done. So on the opposite side of the spectrum, what is your favorite type of content to consume?
My favorite type of content to consume. I've been really into reading about wine lately. No, but in all honesty, yeah. No, I think, that leads into, finding that work-life balance. I think my favorite content to consume lately is content that, is still allows me to kind of pursue my passions, maybe think about my career. One day I'd love to, work in the wine industry. I don't know in what capacity, but I would. So it's really nice to learn about that stuff. But if we're going to talk about a type of content, I think, in all honesty, I think I really like reading about, not necessarily trends, but I like reading about what companies are doing and what different entrepreneurs are doing. I really like reading about current stories. And then how do I relay those? What can I learn from those? Like, there's a lot of great lists out there and a lot of great resource articles, but I like learning through what other people are doing. I like taking bits and pieces from those types of articles. So when I can read about maybe like what has made LinkedIn so successful, that's probably my favorite type of content to read, because it's drawing from, you see the end result, right? Rather than just a post that was conceptualized, you see an end result. I think that's really important. So I would say that learning from real stories is probably my favorite business-wise. But then, but yeah, I've been really into wine and obviously sports all the time.
Well, now I know what to get you for your birthday. I'll get you
Yeah.
a subscription to Wine Spectator.
There we go. There we go. You're getting me excited already.
I know. Well, Harrison, I sincerely appreciate you popping on for the podcast. A pleasure having you on. But before you go, let people know where they can go to be social with you.
So you can follow me on Twitter at KratzH. Used to be at KratzPR, so this is really weird for me. I mean, you can find me
Really, it
on.
was really weird for me too. The first time I saw Harrison change that from at Kratz PR. He was at Kratz PR for the longest time, and they changed it to at Kratz H. I think I tweeted you like Brick Tamblyn in Anchorman. I was like, you're not wrong.
Yeah. It's still weird for me, but you can find me there. You can find me on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/in/hkratz. Yeah, John, and feel free to post all this. And yeah, so that's probably the two best places to get in touch with me. I will warn you that actually my dog is right here right now on the deck with me. So I will warn you that a lot of what I share now is just of my dog. So I've kind of turned into that like dad, but here, I'll show him off to everybody. This is Gatsby.
Hey, Gatsby.
And hey, Gatsby buddy. So he's our new office mascot as well. So, so you'll be able to follow his adventures as well.
One of the most well-behaved dogs in the history of dogs.
Yes, and, well, that's because he's a teddy bear that we just make move.
Speaking of Gatsby, it's your movie coming out real soon.
Oh, yeah.
Friday.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Very excited to see that. And, I really like what they're, you know, and tie it back to social media, I really love what they're doing as well. I think they're definitely taking a cue from, you know, a lot of the movies are doing it now, but they're definitely building the hype really well, just with not long posts or anything, but very just short, getting you ready for the experience, and I think that that's what's really important.
It's all about the cocktail hour.
Exactly.
All right, buddy. Well, you take care of that dog of yours, and to everybody else out there listening, thank you for enjoying another episode of Social Echoes. If you are interested in learning more about it, always can find us at socialechoespodcast.com. You can go to iTunes and Stitcher Radio and search Social Echoes, or you can follow me at JW Steiert, at JWSTEIERT, and you can find the podcast link right there. We will see you guys next week. Appreciate it. Take it easy.
Thanks, John.